Hello, welcome back. Dr. Shaw here with my 7th podcast entitled Teaching Humanity Remotely. Today, I will be discussing strategies. What is a strategy? Why do we need strategies? And how do we use strategies successfully? However, first I want to review two items. First, I want to share how these podcasts came about. First and foremost, I do not feel like I know it all. But rather, I feel our world is in crisis given the coronavirus. And I believe, having taught for over 30 years, I have something that I can contribute. And I really, again, have this great need to be of service and to be contributing to my community. And I think that good teachers are good teachers. One reason is because they have a calling. So I feel like this is my calling. And although I'm not in the classroom having intimate relationships with the 20 students and families that I would normally have over the past 30 years, I get to outreach in a larger community. And I hope that these podcasts prove to be beneficial. However, I want to say that I truly believe that my greatest contribution are in the books that I've written and that I want to be sharing with children and their parents and families and educators. Even prior to the coronavirus, which is causing many of us to have hybrid learning and teaching occur, or remote learning and teaching occur, or even in the classroom, we are not able to socialize the way we would normally socialize without this terrible virus. Even before that, I felt like what I had to offer that was special was that I was really able to promote a learning environment where we all got to practice our humanity, not just me as a teacher teaching children to practice humanity, but me as a human being enjoying that practice. And feeling that what was being created in the classroom illustrated a kind of unity and a kind of cooperation and a kind of humanity that I would want for our society at large. So I always felt like that was what I got to offer in my 2-year program, which was so authentic. And then because of the virus, I felt really compelled to write these books. So I just want to review a little bit about the books. These books were written to really discuss social and emotional growth because the topics include the death of a pet, kids' concern about the coronavirus, cooperation, generous, anger, competition, time out is time in, agree to disagree, and just so many more that I think all of these topics, like for children to sort of have the experience that when they're asked to be timed out, it's not a punishment. It's an invitation. It's an opportunity to take responsibility for how you acted and think about your actions and think if you could do something differently. So the books, I think, are really my greatest contribution. And I really hope that you get to check them out and see if you agree. Most of the books consist of a dialogue between Min Min and Olivia. And I'm Min Min, the grandma, and my granddaughter, Olivia, is the granddaughter. And each of the books include talking points that are really created to deepen critical thinking skills and to invite greater conversations. So that's why I think they're really so useful. They're useful anytime, and they're really useful now. So please feel free to visit my website at learnwithmeremotely.com. You can also see all of my books at Amazon under Dr. Mindy Shaw Paperback Books. In each paperback, there's at least 3 stories, and there are also ebooks, which are individual, that you can get via, you know, online. I happen to think that the paperbacks are a little nicer. I think it's sweeter to read these kinds of books with your children kind of in bed, all cuddled up, and be able to refer back to them over and over again. So when your child's in their room thinking about behavior, they can just pull the book off the shelf. So I think that's a little bit nicer way to view these and really read them. But of course, that would be up to each individual family. So I just wanted to really point that out. The other point that I wanted to review was I wanted to talk about mistakes. So last time, my last podcast was all about celebrating the mistake. Afterwards, I thought about that perhaps I wasn't looking at mistake in every single way. There is a kind of mistake that's not to be celebrated, and that is the kind of mistake that is not learned from. So if a child, for instance, says they're sorry and they don't change their behavior, they're not sorry. What we need to do if, for example, we're sorry, is we need to make sure that our behavior is matched with our thinking and our feeling. And if there is a contradiction, if I say I'm sorry, but I continue to do the same naughty behavior, then I'm not really showing I'm sorry. So if we keep on making mistakes and we're not learning from them, those mistakes are not retakes. It's not like if I take a driving test and I fail my driver's test because I don't know how to parallel park, and then I don't practice and I don't try to learn from my mistake of not knowing how to parallel park and practicing enough to learn how to parallel park. If I don't do that in between and then I just take another driving test, I'm going to fail again. So that kind of mistake doesn't get celebrated. And I just want to speak to something. There were a few behaviors in my classroom and in my home life as a parent that were just not permitted. I had like a zero tolerance. One of those behaviors was if a child misbehaved and that or children misbehaved, and that child or the children, if I asked them, you know, what did they do and why did they do it, and they shrugged their shoulders, that was absolutely unacceptable. Because when they would do that, when they would shrug their shoulders, what they were telling me was, I don't know why I misbehaved, and I don't care. And there was no room, there was no space for them to then have a learning opportunity. If those shoulders were shrugged like that, then what they were telling me was they didn't care. They didn't take any responsibility. And that was not okay. If you do something that's wrong, you need to have the opportunity to reflect on that action and come up with a way to do it differently if it wasn't the right thing to do. So the shrugging of the shoulders is saying, I'm not responsible. And I don't have to be responsible. And that was unacceptable. That was just absolutely not allowed. And it was the same kind of thing. Like, don't say you're sorry. Show me you're sorry. Again, making it more of an action so that then you know that there's sincerity. So I just wanted to really explain. So if the mistake is seen as a invitation to get it right the next time or the next few times by retaking, practicing. The mistake in and of itself is an opportunity and an invitation, definitely for the teacher or the grown-up who's working with the child to see what they know and based on what they know, what they need to learn next or what they need to be practicing through guided practice with the adults aid and help so that they could eventually not need the adult and they really get that learning lesson. However, if the mistake is being made over and over and over again because the child and the learner is not taking responsibility for what they both know and don't know, then that's a mistake that doesn't get celebrated. And then we need to have learning lessons about how do we invite children to start seeing the mistake in a new way. And that's up to us. And that's why, you know, I'm having these podcasts with the hope that we as adults can start seeing things differently. For example, shame. What would make a four-year-old student come into a classroom and feel shame, feel like they have to erase the mistake? Because the baby, again, that baby isn't feeling shame. That baby falls down, gets up, falls down, gets up. When that baby falls down, most of us who are watching little babies learn how to walk, we're very excited. We're giving them, we are socializing their attention. Again, we're saying, good job, you can do it, try again. You need any help? We're just being so into it and we're being so positive about it that there'd be no room for shame. So it's just important for us when we're working with our children, especially when, you know, we're not used to doing this because of the new remote learning that's happening, that we're going to do all that we can to not shame our students when they make a mistake, our children, so that we are teaching them to have a different experience around the mistake so that they can start seeing it as, wow, this is what I know and this is what I don't know and this is what I need to continue to work on and learn. So I think that's what I wanted to say. If a mistake is made over and over and over again because the person who's making the mistake isn't taking any responsibility for how to get it right, that is not a mistake that deserves to be celebrated. And then you need to change how you view that behavior, which leads to another question, which is, how do we help our children become responsible for their behaviors? And I would say that we do that by having high expectations, letting them know what you expect and how you feel that they should be behaving. And when they're not behaving that way, talking to them about it. So I have a book and it's called Anger. Kids get angry. We all get angry. There's nothing wrong with being angry, but there are right and wrong ways to express that anger. So that's why we need to talk about it. If we don't talk about these behaviors, then if a child hits somebody and we don't address that, it's really not their fault. They don't know what to do with their feelings. That's why we have to talk about it. That's why we are socializing children's attention to what we want them to pay attention to. And it's also why we need material such as these books and these conversations that are going to help us feel comfortable with helping our children grow in the area socially and emotionally. That's how I see that, and I think it's very important. So now let's talk about strategies. A strategy is a tool to help you. When I was in college, the tool that I used for me to do really well on my tests when I was taking exams was that I would rewrite my notes. I would rewrite my notes, and every time I would be writing my notes and rewriting my notes, the information would really sink into my consciousness. And then I would be able to share that information on the tests that I were taking. That was a tool that I had to help me. In reading, we learn a lot of strategies when we're first learning how to read. When sometimes parents, for example, think that their young children are just memorizing the words when they're reading, there's a stage. That stage is called role play reading, because that's what your child's supposed to be doing. They're role playing. They are basically memorizing the words, but it is a step in the right direction. Then from memorizing the words, you actually have your child point to each word while they're reading the word. Then you have your child learn the difference between sight words and words that they need to stretch out the sounds that they hear, because they're not learned by sight. They actually are learned by knowing all the sounds of the letters in the word. That's a strategy. There's a strategy of, if there's a word in the middle of the sentence and you don't know, read till the end of the sentence and go back and see what would make sense there. What would make sense there that begins with that letter that the word starts with. So there are all these different strategies. And there are strategies, let's say, in math. We're learning how to add and subtract. Well, I know that when I add numbers, I'm going to end up with the largest number. The answer will be the largest number. And I know that when I subtract, I start with the largest, and I'm going to take away a part, and I'm going to get another part. Those are all strategies, tools to help us. And there are also strategies that we learn in how to make friends, how to be social, how to be appropriate. Someone speaks, the other person listens. Someone speaks, and you look at the person when you're talking and listening to them. Instead of it always being my way when I play a game, I learn to be flexible. I learn to take turns. I learn to share. All tools to help us. Now, what I think is really critical, and I think it's really the most exciting part in a way about learning, is if we teach children through our own modeling, our ability to note what's going on and mark it for them, if we teach children to be reflective about what's taking place, then children will be able to understand the strategies that they're using to learn. So let's say there are 5 strategies for reading for young children. When you read, point to each word. As you're saying each word, point to it. That helps you keep track. When you read, look at the picture, look at the word, see what matches. When you read, ask yourself, what would make sense there? So when I would have a reading group in my class, we would review the various strategies that children might encounter during this reading session. After we read, I would say to the children, what strategy did you use? What strategy did you use? First, I would say, what's a strategy? The children would say, a tool to help us. Then I would say, what strategy did you use and when did you use it in your reading today? So that they could call it. They could say, this is what I'm doing. And let's say they're using the strategy of sounding out words because the words that they were reading were sound audible. They're going to learn the difference between the words that are sound audible and the words that they just need to memorize from sight. And the more we have children being reflective about the strategies that they're using, the greater their independent learning will be. And when you have children learning like this, where they're taking responsibility for their learning, I call that they're having a self-extended system. Once your child has a self-extended system, you don't need to always be aiding them in the same way. For example, when you first want your child to say please, you might do something like this. You might say to your child, Sally, can you please pass me? So you're modeling. The child passes you whatever you asked for. And then you say, you know, I really wanted you to do that. So I asked you please, because that's a nice way of asking. So in the beginning, you're really being very intentional about what you want your child to learn. You're marking it. You're letting it do your child know every time it happens. So that when your child asks you for something, if your child doesn't say please, you could say, remember, what's the nice word? And then have them, you know, repeat and say, please, can you give me my drink or something? So you're doing a lot of that in the beginning so that they become habitually able to do it automatically, kind of, because you want them to have nice manners automatically. We're doing that with everything we teach children. And what I am suggesting is that at a certain point, you want to lessen your role in reminding them to do the right thing because you've already done that. And so now you're going to change your responsibility, your part of the responsibility of your child's learning, by sharing the task. For example, instead of telling the child that they're going to be saying please, when they say please, the next time you could say, I love that you said please. And then eventually you won't need to reinforce that because it's just going to be done over and over again. So what we want is we want to teach our children, let's say, how to behave appropriately. So let's say we want to teach our children how to express their anger. So we first will read the book on anger and we'll talk about it. And then when you see your child getting upset, before your child gets upset, because at this point your child may not have the strategy of self-control. They may not have that tool yet. So you're still having to be very present, right? And you're going to intervene and you're going to say, wow, I can see you're getting upset. You know what? You may want to hit that pillow. What's another thing you can do? So it's sort of like you're just like you're nipping it in the bud and you're giving the child one suggestion and then you are listening for the child to see if they have a suggestion, because that's always best, because the more that your child can take on of their learning, the less you have to give it to them, right? Because they, and it also shows you where their knowledge really is. Well, they know that they could hit the pillow, but they still didn't remember that they could also put their meanies down the sink. Or they know that they could put their meanies down the sink, but they're forgetting that they could also flush him down the toilet, or whatever it is that, you know, whatever the strategies are that you're like reviewing with them. So when your child first makes a mistake, like in the spelling of the word coat, and it's C-O-T, and those are all the sounds that your child hears, there needs to be a lot of celebration about everything that your child knows in that word. And yet there's still more to learn. There's no reason for your child to feel ashamed that they didn't know that there has to be another vowel in that word to make the O say O. It's just a small little learning lesson you're going to give them that information. The next time they write the word coat, they do C-O-T-E. That's still not 100% correct, but the mistake is really great because now you're knowing, wow, your child listened to you because you said, you know, if there's a magic E at the end, the O could say, oh, you already told them that. And so that could have been one of the conclusions that they came up with. And it's also letting you, or if, you know, you're the teacher, letting you know that either your child or your student is understanding and listening to what you say. And so then that needs to be discussed until that word is mastered with the two vowels go walking and the first one does the talking, which is C-O-A-T. And when that happens, then you say to the learner, wow, that's fantastic. How did you know how to spell that word? And because there's so much discussion and so much reflection, the learner's going to be able to say, that's a sight word. I need to know that word by sight. And I just now know that it's the O and the A that makes the O say O in coat. It's something that could be talked about. So what we want is to provide our children with lots of strategies, lots of tools that can help them. And as they're learning these tools, as they're learning these strategies, you, as the teacher, you are letting your child know why they're useful and how to use them. Once you see that your child's starting to take responsibility for his or her learning, then instead of you always telling the child why they're using that tool, then the conversation gets a little more interesting and you share it and say, wow, I saw that you did this today. Why did you do that? Or you could say, what did you do to figure out that word? So you're still having a conversation, but instead of you giving the answer, you just give enough of a question and you give wait time so that your child can come up with the appropriate response. And then what you're teaching your child is, look, not only did you know the answer, but you know how you got the answer. When you know how something works, how you're working, how you're reflecting and thinking about your learning, it's called metacognition. Thinking about your own learning. And so when I created these books, I created the talking points so that parents who are not used to speaking with their children regarding these subjects could have the language to know what to say. And I also created the talking points so that the children, after reading the books, could say, oh, this is what a bully is. And these are the strategies I can use when dealing with bullies. Because you really want children to be independent. Once your child or children are independent in their learning, then they're responsible learners. Until they're independent, you're sharing the responsibility. And that's okay too, because if your child wants to do something, let's say your child wants to ride a bike. If your child can do that independently, that is what you ultimately want them to do. But you also want to make sure at every step of that learning curve that you are helping them be successful by noting and marking. First, they have training wheels. Then they don't have training wheels, but you hold on to them for a little while. Then you say, look, do you see? You're able to balance. Why can you ride the bike and not fall? Mom, Dad, I could ride that bike and not fall because I know how to balance. I know how to stop myself. I know how to ride my bike independently because I know the ways in which I can be safe. So then you know that they know. So it's why I feel like the mistake is something to celebrate as long as the person who's making the mistake is being responsive enough to be responsible. And when the shoulders are shrugged, there is no responsibility. And when there's no responsibility, there is no new learning that's going to happen. So I think these books invite the opportunity for children to learn how to take responsibility by having conversations with their adult caregivers and having the adult caregivers marking, this is what it is to be generous. This is what it is to be greedy. This is what competition looks like. This is what it means to be a good sport. This is what it means to know how to take turns in sharing. You're having these conversations around the dinner table or around bedtime so that eventually you are teaching your children how to have strategies so that they can have tools to help them so that they could eventually have a self-extended system that allows them to be independent and responsible learners. Until next time, this is Dr. Vindi Shah here. May we spend the next week helping the children that we love to become independent, responsible learners by using strategies which are tools to help them. Enjoy.
You can learn more about Dr. Shah on her website, which is learnwithmeremotely.com. All of her books are there. The links to the podcast are there. Her philosophy and background and history. It's well worthwhile to check out that site. You can also find her Learn With Me Remotely page on Facebook. On Instagram, she's Dr. Mint Shah. And on Twitter, she's Dr. Mindy Shah 1. Thanks for joining us today. Watch out for the next podcast. Thanks.